Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. As we begin the month of June, we look back at May performance and look ahead for what we can expect over the next several weeks and into the rest of the summer. Now, May was good for the markets, although some of the gains were given up in the last week. So where the markets go from here will depend on the May data that starts releasing today. Joining us for this morning's conversation, as always, to interpret what has happened and what to expect going forward. Glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, as always, thank you for dropping by on a Monday morning to start another trading week. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. It's good to be here. Happy Monday.
So, Jason, a good starting point perhaps is May market performance, which, as I mentioned, was good overall. So can you summarize for our listeners what happened and what factors drove the performance we witnessed throughout the month of May?
Well, let's look across different asset classes. For equities, it was a positive story pretty much across the board. The S&P 500 was up nearly 5% for the month. Tech as a sector led the way, up about 10%. And all sectors but energy were up for the month. So there was kind of a good breadth. It wasn't just, you know, a couple of stocks or a couple of sectors kind of driving the performance. During the month, we saw bond yields decline. As a result, government bond returns were about 1.5% for a month. That's a pretty good return for bonds in 1 month, reflecting the declining yield that kind of peaked out in mid, kind of late April. Commodities overall did well, led by gold, copper. So the general story is good across the markets. As you mentioned, there was a little bit of pullback towards the end of last week, so off about 1% or so from the highs on the S&P 500. And likewise, bond yields rose a little bit, so it gave up some of the bond returns. But again, a good story. Underneath the headline numbers, there's also some interesting details. You just take the technology sector, just for kind of the for the week, it was down the most, whereas utilities, real estate, energy were actually up. So energy was down for the month, but actually up for the week. There's some lot of headline numbers for some of the tech sector stocks, a few that were down significantly, some software companies and when they reported earnings. So software overall in the tech space, even though it's done very well for the year, is down 4%. But that is offset by the fact that semis are up 23% and hardware up 14%. So the headline numbers mask, I think, some of the overall churn underneath the headlines, a fair amount of kind of rotation, but generally a positive story certainly for the month of May. As to why that happens, I'd kind of make it very simple. The investors kind of re-embraced or put more probability on sort of a soft landing scenario for the economy after flirting with the kind of a no landing or stagflation risk in April. Those are still present, but I think this probability shifted from those scenarios to a kind of a soft landing in the month of May, in addition to the AI narrative with NVIDIA earnings kind of providing another kind of tailwind. From a macro perspective, the way I kind of define it is that the views among the investors have kind of can reconverge to some extent toward this soft landing. And the consensus view, if I were to kind of summarize it for many investors right now, is basically growth is going to be slowing this year, but not cracking. Inflation is stubborn, but the trend is still lower. And the bar for Fed rate cuts is relatively low while hikes are effectively off the table. Like, that's kind of the view that most investors have at this point in time. I think that, relatively benign macro backdrop is the main reason why the markets rallied as much as they did in May.
So, Jason, running with investor confidence, you mentioned that investor confidence in a soft landing increased, which you did discuss in your most recent blog. That title is Convergence. So why do you think that happened?
Well, the convergence means like investors' views kind of converged again back to this soft landing. As we go back to the start of the year, investors by and large kind of believe that, or the view was the soft landing, what happened, that was the consensus view. The conviction on this has sort of oscillated, throughout the year so far. A lot of that really kind of traces back to the inflation narrative, inflation not coming down as much as investors assumed. And market volatility is kind of tracked this evolution in the confidence in a soft landing. As I mentioned, the probability of, a no-landing scenario and even stagflation rose in April. This happened because the March payroll data was far better than expected. We got around 330,000 gains for the March payrolls. That came out in early April, far above expectations. It actually suggested that job growth was accelerating relative to the end of last year. Then also in March, we got in April, we got the March CPI data, which was, again, above expectations. sentiment every month in the first quarter was exceeding expectations. It wasn't just a January effect. So you have an economy that looks like it's almost reaccelerating, which means the prospect of higher rates for even longer took hold. Keep in mind, in roughly mid, late January, the market was pricing for 7 rate cuts this year. By the time we got to a point in April, it was down to only about 30 basis points, or just over 1 cut. So significant repricing of rate cut expectations. So you could have higher for even longer rates, and even the possibility of additional rate hikes, and all that combined to kind of lead to the market to sell off in April, and we saw the S&P was down about 5%. There was a commensurate rise in volatility, both in the bond market and equity markets. What happened is that once we got really actually almost the end of April, like it was April 30th, it was the FOMC meeting when the chair, Jay Powell, effectively said, we're not going to hike, or at least that's not something that the committee is currently thinking about. So kind of brushed off questions, really diminished the risk that more hikes are on the table. They may have to wait longer, but at least hikes aren't there. Then we got the March or the April payrolls report that showed job growth had moderated to about 175,000, below expectations, and again suggesting that reacceleration in the first quarter, that was a bit anomalous. And then we got the April CPI data that came in along with expectations, which just by being at expectations was maybe better than feared after the first 2 months of the year. And it was consistent with inflation, again, sort of trending lower. So where we were in sort of mid, late April to where we are now, again, this kind of views of a soft landing have been sort of re-embraced. A different way of thinking about it is that the tail risks of a no landing of stagflation, they got trimmed in May. Particularly kind of the prospect of a no landing scenario where growth and inflation are reaccelerating. And a simple way that I look at it, and I kind of show this in the blog, is that measures of volatility in the market, like the VIX index for equities and the MOVE index for the bond market for treasuries, they both fell in the month. And actually, they fell to levels, the lowest levels they were have been at since prior to the Fed starting its rate hikes in March of 22. So over 2-year lows for both those indices that happened kind of late in the month. So they're consistent with kind of views of how the economy is going to move, narrowing down, getting more precise on a soft landing, investor confidence in that kind of increasing, and that again sort of was the key driver for, I think, for the markets kind of going higher in general during the month of May.
Could this convergence, as you describe it, and the resulting low market volatility last for a while? And if not, what could disrupt it?
Well, this calm could last well into the summer, or it could get disrupted in the next 2 weeks. We have 3 key data points, among others, but 3 key ones coming up just in the next 10 days. On Friday, June 7th, we get the May payrolls report. Consensus expectations is about 175,000. On Wednesday, June 12th at 8:30 in the morning, we get the May CPI data. It's expected that the month-over-month inflation will again be around 0.3% or 0.2 in that range. And then in that afternoon, it's the FOMC meeting where the Fed will update its economic projections, and also there'll be a revisions to the dot plot, the median forecast for the number of rate cuts this year. We think that's likely to go from 3 to 2. So if the data for any of those points or all of them collectively deviate significantly from expectations, that can certainly introduce volatility. It depends on whether what's driving it. So a strong payrolls report might lead the market to believe that Fed could actually only cut once this year. A weak payrolls report that could really sort of cement in that the Fed's going to cut a couple times. The Fed could surprise by saying we're only going to probably cut once, which the market would take basically meaning December, so a long way out. So there's definitely a lot of scope for volatility to be reintroduced to the markets, and sort of for the market narrative, or at least the confidence that has kind of increased on the soft landing, that could get disrupted in some way. If it all comes in roughly in line with expectations, then this conviction or this convergence will probably stay relatively elevated. I would note that you may end it on a little bit of a soft note. Some of that reflects perhaps the position adjustments. There's evidence that hedge funds were relatively active sellers of equities to end the month, maybe booking profits, perhaps going into the start of the holiday season, adjusting some portfolio positioning, but that was sort of notable. And the growth data we got at the end of the month was also uninspiring. Q1 GDP was revised lower, and with it sort of personal consumption expenditure data. And then we got for April the personal consumption expenditure data, and it shows it kind of barely grew in the month of April. Home sales were weak. Some other manufacturing indices were a little bit weak. So signs with the economy and growth kind of slowing. So a payrolls report that is weak on Friday would kind of further exacerbate maybe fears the economy is slowing quite a bit. but that could also be offset to some extent if the increases Fed expectations for rate cuts this year. So that's the near term. I think one of the more interesting dynamics is we're unofficially in the start of summer, but it certainly feels like summer here in the Northeast, that as we move further into the summer in July and August, that a lot of investor focus will start to shift from the rest of this year to what happens in 2025. And while views have converged to a pretty narrow path for this year, for the economy holding up, for the Fed to cut twice, once, or not at all, that's a pretty narrow range. But looking to next year, there's a much wider range. Perhaps if the Fed doesn't cut at all, the next move has to be a hike, which won't happen this year, but that could happen next year. Growth could slow significantly, which would force the Fed to cut maybe much more aggressively than the market's currently pricing. And there's also questions of just how restrictive Fed policy is right now. There's even former Fed officials last week were out there saying like policy is not that restrictive. Other Fed officials are saying we think it actually is quite restrictive. So a lot of debate about them is how restrictive it is it and how much does the Fed actually have to cut? That's a 2025 in some way story, but the debate's going to begin this year and probably at some point in the second half of this year, and I think as soon as the summer. So even if the market data the next 10 days is relatively benign and that kind of views on soft landing stay steady, that could be disrupted as we move further into summer as people start debating where do we go from here.
With that, Jason, given that market outlook, I'm curious, how is the Chief Investment Office currently recommending that investors position their portfolios?
Well, near term, we could get more volatility just as this data comes in. And volatility is quite low right now. So whenever that happens, this is not a bad opportunity to use that to your advantage, position offensively rather than defensively by, perhaps buying protection for your portfolio, using structured solutions and products to get exposure to the markets while the hedging aspect is relatively inexpensive, rather than kind of selling outright positions, which because there's very good possibility the markets could keep kind of grinding higher. I think for the near term, the market's going to need sort of new catalyst for the markets to go higher overall. For that to happen, I think the data has to come out, not just at expectations, but sort of beat expectations kind of across the board. So kind of a Goldilocks set of data that we get from growth, inflation, and the Fed. We need to get kind of more AI drivers, whether that is, without earnings coming up in the next month or so, but other conferences or reports from companies in terms of AI deployment and development and adoption. So those would be the key drivers. So the markets overall to go higher. I think where we think there's opportunities is a little bit more of being perhaps at this time selective. So within the tech space, a lot of companies have sold off. So rather than thinking about this as a headwind for the sector, think about it as an opportunity to kind of get back and get exposure to companies that have maybe sold off a little bit too much, given the market reaction to some of the earnings numbers. Because the AI theme, we think, still has a lot of kind of runway to play out. Small caps are an area that had performed well, got a little bit of indigestion towards the end of the month as concerns about rates going staying elevated for longer. But again, if the macro backdrop plays out as we think, small caps are well positioned. And looking outside of the U.S. as well, international markets, which aren't as expensive, and the ECB is very likely to cut rates this Thursday, and that can again provide a bit of a tailwind for equities outside of the U.S. and certainly in Europe. On the fixed income side, the message continues to be kind of buy quality bonds, but think of it as an opportunity to kind of when you want to buy. We think the 10-year sort of range bound for the time being between roughly 4.2% and 4.7%. Last week, at some point, we got up to 4.6%. When it gets to that level, these are pretty good entry points to add exposure. We know municipal bond yields have also kind of widened out. So, high quality munis, this is an attractive time to buy because the seasonals tend to turn where spreads compress during the summer. So lock in these attractive yields while you can.
Well, Jason, as always, a very productive conversation to begin the week. Thank you for helping our listeners make sense of recent market activity, as well as sharing with us CIO's near to longer term expectations for the markets and bringing us up to speed on the current positioning recommendations. So thank you again, Jason, for dropping by and wish you a great week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, Jason's most recent blog, Convergence, is available for you now up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly, as well as the current UBS House View publication suite for the month of June that is now available. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.